Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, will inflation be the next big worry for markets and for household budgets as well? Fast rising prices is not something that most of us have really experienced. Could this year see the return of an old enemy for investors? If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. You have to be of a certain vintage to really remember the last time inflation provided a serious problem for investors. At points during the financial crisis, inflation ran at almost 5%, but you have to go all the way back to 1991 to see inflation at really eye-watering levels. Back then, it peaked above 9%. More recently, inflation has been driven lower, spending most of the last decade below the Bank of England's 2% target. But many are predicting that that could soon change. To answer why and to tell us what it means, I'm pleased to say that I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity.
Thanks, Ed.
Tom, welcome along. Why is inflation being talked up right now, Tom? Why is this different to other times that inflation has been talked up?
Yes, I think inflation has not been a problem for so long. I mean, you talked about being of a certain vintage to remember. I think I probably am of that vintage that I can remember. Indeed, I can remember when inflation was rather higher than 9%. Back in the 1970s, it was a great deal higher than that for a brief period of time. So, you know, many people active in the markets today simply have no experience of investing in an inflationary environment. But what's happening at the moment with the extraordinary measures that are being taken to get us through the pandemic situation, and indeed the measures that were taken, you know, a few years ago to get us through the financial crisis, are leading many people to think that inflation may start to become a problem again. Clearly, it's not at the moment. If you look at the inflation figures, in fact, you know, we're recording on Wednesday this week, and we just had the inflation figures for the UK, and you know, inflation is less than 1%. It's not a problem at the moment. But people are looking at what's going on around the world in terms of the amount of money that's being spent by governments, and they worry that that is a recipe for a return of inflation.
Indeed. It's all to do with, I guess, this extra money sloshing about. The case for inflation, Tom, the case for it rising in a significant way seems to be based on something that would actually be quite good news, it seems anyway, which is that once we get through this pandemic and once things can open up and economies can free themselves from COVID restrictions, there's going to be a lot of demand out there. There's going to be a lot of potential, you know, cash sitting in people's accounts, and they're going to get out there and spend. Now, that's not a bad scenario looked at from one point of view. How certain do you think that is?
Well, it's extremely uncertain because the future always is uncertain. But I mean, let's just dwell on those inflation figures this morning again. And we just saw that there was a pickup in inflation from 0.3% to 0.6%. What was driving that? Well, it was spending on transport. It was spending on leisure activities and, to a certain extent, spending on clothing. So that is sort of indicative that, you know, that consumer spending is important to this inflation equation. And I think what we've seen over the pandemic is that people have not been able to get out and spend. They've not been able to go out to restaurants and pubs and the like. And I think there is a lot of pent-up demand waiting to be unleashed again when we get through this pandemic situation. So that's one of the reasons why people are looking forward to a more inflationary environment, as well as the sort of liquidity questions that we hinted at before. But of course, it is uncertain because, you know, we don't know when that pent-up spending will arrive. The timing is extremely uncertain because we don't know how the vaccination program is likely to unfold, etc.
Indeed. And you can tell that this story or this fear about inflation rising in a significant way, it's kind of capturing the mood at the moment. There's been lots written in the past week. You've written about it, of course, Tom, in the past week as well. Can you tell us how this time round is perhaps the same or different from different periods in the past when it comes to inflation? Can history actually tell us anything about how markets might react if we do see higher inflation?
Yes, I think that the historical comparisons are quite instructive. They're quite interesting. So the periods that I sort of go back to when I try and assess what's going on at the moment are, I mean, the obvious one, the really sort of inflationary period in my lifetime was in the 1970s. And what really triggered that, I think, was, you know, enormous government spending, particularly in the US, to fund the Vietnam war effort, and that fed through into an upward price spiral. So clearly, what governments are doing, the amount of government spending, fiscal spending, is an important factor. If you go back to you know, even earlier than that, in the aftermath of the Second World War, there was a lot of government spending in terms of the recovery from the war effort. It coincided, importantly, with a period of very loose monetary policy, so low interest rates. Bond yields were pegged at a low level by the government, and it was that combination of loose monetary policy and heavy government spending which triggered a pickup in inflation in subsequent years. And I think it's that combination which is important when you look at what's going on today, because if you go back, you know, if you go back to the financial crisis, we also had a lot of, you know, money printing, quantitative easing, bond buying by central banks. It didn't lead to inflation. Everyone thought that it might, but it didn't. And I think the key difference between then and now is that we didn't have this coordinated fiscal government spending policy and central bank interest rate policy. It's the combination of the two together that is potentially so inflationary.
Yeah, and I wanted to dwell a bit, if we can, on that comparison between now and 2008-09 and the financial crisis. We did have, as you say, the same predictions for tearaway inflation back then, because of all the extra quantitative easing, the extra money that was pumped into the economy. And I suppose many would say that you know, back then we didn't see the headline rates of inflation to CPI, or CPIH, as is sometimes used. We didn't see that really rising very highly, but we did get higher prices for asset prices, for the stock market, and we got price rises for houses as well. And people would say, well, look, there's your inflation right there. You've mentioned it a bit, but what really is the difference now? I mean, why should we pay more heed to warnings about higher inflation now when those predictions back a decade or so ago were wrong?
I think you need to understand the reason why that money printing didn't lead to inflation. And I think it's to do with what happened to the money. And to understand that, you actually have to go back before the financial crisis and to look at the state of the banking sector, because the banking sector was running extremely hot. They didn't have reserves to underpin their financial position. And so when the financial crisis came along, the banks were in an extremely difficult and vulnerable position. So the liquidity injections by central banks then effectively found their way into the bank's balance sheets and back into the central bank, creating the reserves to bolster the position of those banks. It didn't actually feed through into the real economy. Now, the difference between then and now is that the money that's being printed now is explicitly being targeted at finding its way into people's pockets. So if you look at the $1.9 trillion fiscal spending program that has just been approved in the US, that includes checks for $1,400 to every individual in the United States. The money is being printed to be directly spent in the real economy. And that is a fundamental difference. Back in 2008, there wasn't really much economic growth caused by that money printing. This time, I think the expectation is that there will be.
Yeah, indeed. And as you say there, you know, part of the story is the spending that governments do. And we do have a new government in the US, of course. Joe Biden was sworn in as president this week. I mean, how do you expect that to change this inflation story? You mentioned there the COVID relief package. Is that all that's going to change inflation globally and in the US? How does Biden change things?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, but I think that's only a sort of short term, you know, sticking plaster on the pandemic situation. I think that there's a more fundamental fiscal impulse as a result of the election of Joe Biden. He has, a well-expressed desire to spend on infrastructure, to rebuild after the pandemic, to build back better, if you like. That's fine. You know, the president can have those views, but in most cases, it's not possible to push through that agenda because of the built-in gridlock in the American system. You know, very often the usual state of affairs is that one party does not control, both houses in Congress and the White House. That is the situation which we have. Currently, the Democrats control the Senate, they control the House of Representatives, and of course, the president is a Democrat. What that means is that if the president wants to push through a big spending program, the chances are that he's going to get the support from Congress to do that. This is the so-called blue sweep, which we've talked about before. It's a pretty fragile blue sweep because it basically involves, you know, a 50-50 split in the Senate, which is only broken by the fact that the vice president has a casting vote in that situation. But nonetheless, you know, the Democrats do control everything that they need to control in order to push through this spending program. And I think that changes the inflation story because we are going to get more spending than we would have done otherwise.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, the American political situation is obviously pretty finely balanced. It's interesting, actually, isn't it, about those majorities and very slim majorities that the Democrats hold. It's not as simple as just having, you know, 50 plus Kamala Harris to get things through the Senate, because there are Democrat senators, of course, in what we would term purple states, who are actually pretty hawkish on things like government spending, aren't they? They've got a big sort of rightish kind of constituency to keep on side as well. So it's not quite the case that Joe Biden can do exactly what he wants.
No, that's exactly right. And in fact, before the election, when our investment teams were analysing the possible outcomes, they distinguished between, you know, what they sort of termed a big blue sweep and a small blue sweep. And clearly what we've got at the moment is very much a small blue sweep. It's a very fragile majority that the Democrats enjoy. And it would only take one or two Democrat senators to say, yeah, one. Yeah, literally one.
Well, one
it would
yeah.
only take one to say, I think this is a step too far in terms of spending for it not to get through. So it does mean that the fiscal impulse is likely to be lower than it would have been, you know, had the Democrats had a, you know, five or six majority in the Senate.
Okay. Well, finally, Tom, what can any of us, or should any of us, any of us do about this? It's not certain that we're going to get inflation, of course, but if we did, where would you expect to lose out, and where would you expect to benefit?
Yes, I mean, I think that we all need to think about how we can prepare our portfolios for a more inflationary environment. As I say, it's not a problem now, but if we do get inflation, it will creep up on us over time. And of course, the cost of protecting our portfolios against inflation will rise as it becomes more likely that inflation is actually going to arise. So the time to do it is now. So what are the ways in which you can hedge against rising prices? Well, certain assets historically perform better in inflationary environments. With modest inflation, shares, equities tend to perform better because companies have an ability to raise their prices in line with rising inflation. So shares tend to do better than bonds because bonds are a fixed income asset class, and that means that they are historically the worst possible place to be in an inflationary environment, because as inflation rises, the value of that fixed monetary return from your bonds diminishes. So I think, you know, at that very basic level, bonds or equities, I think that investors should be thinking about weighting their portfolios more towards shares than to bonds. But there are other asset classes which are also interesting in this environment. Commodities, for example. You know, if we have got a demand-led return of inflation, then commodities are likely to be in short supply and the prices are likely to rise. So that's one area of interest. Gold is traditionally a reasonable hedge against rising prices as well. So some gold within a portfolio would also makes sense. One final asset class I sort of think about at the moment is a source of income, a source of rising income in a portfolio, and that might be infrastructure. So what an infrastructure company can charge on its assets is likely to rise in an inflationary environment. So infrastructure, commodities, precious metals, shares, bonds is the area which I would be most cautious about in this environment.
Okay. Well, Tom, look, that is all that we have time for now. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.